in the material world anyway. As long as we're in the material world, there's always, to every peak there's a valley. So we were humbly requesting you if you could kindly maybe share some of your, you know, personal challenges in relationship to the Holy Name. You have every year you take vartas, you know, to chant X amount of rounds, and just, you know, the things, the personal things that you're going through. And again, on the difficult part, you know, on the thing that, you know, where the obstacles that come from inside, from outside. And we really, that's always kind of what is for us as normally ordinary mortals who are not up there and who don't have the, you know, who don't have the perfect lifestyle, don't have to go to work and do all kinds of other things. It's just, it's kind of a ray of hope that I'm not alone struggling. Even the giants, you know, they have maybe even bigger struggles. So that's kind of how you're facing that and how you're dealing with that. So So basically, we're asking you to become vulnerable, Maharaj. Just to become vulnerable in front of all of us and tell us kind of what's going on. And what do you think? We have till 6. We have till 6, right? Yeah. So,
I think for a minimum of 15 minutes would be good, and then
I was thinking 20 to half an hour. That's 20 minutes to half an hour.
Maybe
we'll see how it goes.
Can also ask me if you wish to. Yeah.
And then, so just also let you know what we're doing afterwards. Then after you kind of open up the space and allowed us to go into this and ask these questions and look at these difficult aspects of our spiritual life, then we will also we ask everyone individually to take inventory and kind of come in touch with that themselves, write down, do some journaling on that for their own struggles. And then we're going to share it in small groups, like 3 or 4 in a small group. We share it among ourselves. And then maybe also if there's time with the group at the end. So that's kind of how we're going to handle the session this afternoon. Is that okay?
Yes.
So, thank you much.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatyare Satarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Garadha Shivashadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Yagapurusha Prabhu, if I should say something or talk about something which is not exactly relevant, you can, and Archana Siddhi, you can both obviously interrupt me and point me like in an interview. First of all, I wish to say that I think it is perfectly normal that we struggle in our relationship with the Holy Name, and it is something which all spiritual texts, including Gaudiya Vaishnava texts, reflect very much. For me, there is personally one, I would say, two struggles. It's first of all indifference and no taste when I chant. That's a big one. I call it the desert path of chanting. And then also there is another area, which is that sometimes when one chants, material attachments come into the mind. Some of them quite embarrassing, even. So I would like to maybe talk about these two by giving you an example. After I had understood that the chanting of the holy name is really for us disciples of Prabhupada the prime means to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, I began to think, let me dedicate extra time for this, and I started to go every year to my own yearly retreats, something which I have religiously kept up for the last, I think, 20 years or so. And maybe it's 17 years, but it's really, it has now a history. And it was during one of my first japa retreats in Govardhan, where these two obstacles, dryness and material attachments, came up right one after the other. And I like to share this with you because I think you can benefit from it. At that time, I was invited by Tamakrishna Goswami to stay in what is now the Bhaktivedanta Ashram. We used to call it the Prabhupada Palace at that time. But it was not at all inhabited. It was inhabited by monkeys. Tamakrishna Maharaj had the king's room for himself, a suite, I think you would say. And we used the same bathroom. I had to go for considerable, I mean like 150 meters down and around the corner to get to the same bathroom. And he would do his bhajan and I would do my bhajans, and occasionally we would meet. So in order to facilitate my adventurous spirit, I purchased a bicycle in Mathura and went every day during the day to some places around Giriraj Govardhan to just sit alone near the hill. At that time, it was not, I mean, now the hill is accessible from all the sides, but at that time it was not. There were deep forests you could go to. Yes, and I found this one very nice valley near Giriraj Govardhan where I really liked to chant. So 3 times a week I went there. Now one time, I would always take my chadar and put it between two trees to have a shady spot which the noon sun wouldn't get to. Noon sun is terrible when you're out in Vrindavan. Noon sun you must avoid because the noon sun takes all your life. It's very unhealthy to be out there, and the body gets very dehydrated because all around you is flimmering heat and it sucks out all the energy. So you need substantial shade to make it through the noon sun. So I was sucked out of energy. It was a bad day for me. I had gotten up very late, and in India we are not always on the same energy level. Sometimes we feel ill. So I remember my chanting was, I think, due to the weak mind, and the temperature was really like, and I remember there was nothing in my heart, nothing. So I knew this is now the dry desert chanting. I've experienced this often. No problem, I will go through it. So I dozed a little bit off, and the next thing I see in my dreams an old LP, means long playing record cover, called Electric Ladyland by Jimi Hendrix, and all the ladies in the Electric Ladyland were not at all clothed, only by the four directions they were clothed. I was not a Jimi Hendrix fan, I was a Stones fan, so it was beneath my dignity to engage with Electric Ladyland. And also I was now a Brahmachari, so I immediately opened my eyes to get the images out, and remember I saw about 300 monkey couples copulating. This was clearly a sexual scene. So I closed the eyes again, and then Electric Ladyland came up. I opened the eyes to avoid Electric Ladyland, and I saw Electric Monkeyland. So that was really very embarrassing. Then on top of it all, I all of a sudden hear a song by the band Led Zeppelin, Heartbreaker or some I will give you my love, I will give you my love, I will give you my love. Ah! You know, the singer was constantly repeating himself. And then I could understand at that moment. Because the first thing I understood, what do I hear? I can't imagine that Led Zeppelin gives a concert in Jatipur, you know, because there is not sufficient electricity there. You need a lot of voltage to fuel this tremendous, I don't know how loud they are. They're really loud, you know. So what am I hearing? It can't be that they play for the Bridge Basis in Jatipur. It can't be. The sound and also the pictures must come from somewhere else. That's what I understood. And when I searched from where it came, it came from my own heart. It was not from outside. It came from my own heart. So that was really the first time where I clearly saw the power of sanskaras, old sanskaras, which come to us when we don't have sufficient amount of taste in Krishna consciousness, but go through a desert period. And I could see I was really, really helpless. The pictures were there. The music was there, which was like an illustration of you know, romantic adventures, and it started to get really like intense, and I became disturbed. It was no longer that I looked at this in an innocent way, but my heart started to churn. And I must say, some attachments, old attachments from I think previous lifetimes, because I was a wild person, but had no exposure with this sexuality in this life. I somehow Krishna saved me in this life for making a direct physical contact with anything, you know, in that regard. So, but I could see it came from a previous life, and it was still there, and it was working in me, and I was really sad. I cried. I could not continue my chanting because I felt I was a pretender. And I felt, but it was so loud around me, and the monkeys were so active around me. And when I closed my eyes, these crazy pictures of poor ladies who make some money to expose their bodies to the photographer. You know, all this was just so, again, overwhelmingly there. It was really strong that after trying for another 20 minutes or so, I just gave it up. I went out of the forest. I felt a sinner and a wretch, and I was crying profoundly. I thought, no use for my spiritual life. My spiritual master is also gone. He who will protect me in this time and age, he has left the body. I have no chance. I tried, but I failed. And I was actually thinking, I will now go to bed. I will eat something and then go to bed. And if in the morning still these pictures are there, I will go back to Germany. I will not consider myself fit to do this brata. I was hopeless. I was also so hopeless that I've profited very much when I read John of the Cross, The Dark Night of the Soul. I highly recommend it for those who are interested in spiritual psychology. It's somewhat difficult to read because it's in an old language, but I think you have to read it directly. He describes two dark nights of the soul. John of the Cross is his name, Spanish mystic, a pupil of Teresa of Avila. John of the Cross describes two nights. You know, it's a fashionable expression, night of the soul, but what does it mean? The first night means when you are very much addicted to sensual things, also to prestige, or when you collect items like rosaries or beads or garments or books, thinking that this can replace your spiritual values and spiritual treasures. So the first dark night of the soul is attachment to gross external things. But then comes the second dark night, and the second night is what I experienced eventually. It is when you lose faith, when it doesn't make sense any longer to you. Then it's really dark. The other thing is, okay, you want to eat cookies and cream, you know, that is a mild dark night of the soul, you know. I mean, that's harmless. Really strong material attachments. But then comes out of this, when it's not stopped, the real thing. And that is when it all doesn't make sense any longer. You might have sometimes experienced this when you say, is there really a soul? Is there really Krishna? Is it real? Is that real? You might have sometimes you have found this in your heart, this questioning. This is the real dark night. I mean, that's the problem, because that's the real problem. And I experience listlessness in spiritual life, inertness, just really everything in my brain felt like bad mouth odor, you know, just, you know, like really stinky, smelly, bad mouth odor. And I couldn't heal it on myself, for myself. So I believe that one should be real in spiritual life, and therefore I stopped my chanting. I was senseless. I mean, I had chanted many, many more rounds than 16 rounds that day, but I really felt so miserable now because of that dark night. And I still remember, I said, Krishna, if you are there, could you please help me if you are there? So at that time, I can only say something happened. I walked around and I met the Maharaj with the head. What is his name? Bhakti Vishram Madhava Maharaj. He was just coming boisterous around Govardhan. He said, here the famous Sachinandan Swami is hiding. I really gave him a mean look. I said, here's the infamous wretch, the absolute failure, the disgrace to his spiritual master. Don't be so negative, Maharaj. Come along with me. You know, no, I don't come along with anyone. No. Do you know where Surabhi Kund is? Kindly, Maharaj, leave me alone. No, where is Surabhi? So he insisted to take me to Surabhi Kund, and finally I did it. And when we entered the place, he said to me with a twinkle of the eye, this is where the great offender Indra, who was so attached, got forgiven by Krishna. You know, when you are in this state of mind, just like Mukundaji was telling us this morning, when you are in a certain state, moved very much, then small things like this mean all the world for you, you know. So I remember I went there, I paid my obeisances, I felt something on my head, and I just got up, and it was monkey stool, but I didn't care. You know, I put my head back in place again, and I just prayed and prayed and prayed. You have forgotten Indra, you have forgiven Indra. Can you please forgive me also? I'm for many long years, I have been addicted to sense gratification, so selfish sense gratification. I'm very, very bad. Therefore, because my mind is so void of real Krishna consciousness, I feel so tasteless when I chant your holy name, and when I feel so tasteless, all the material tastes come back. First and foremost, sexuality, and then I'm just, can you please forgive me, and can you fix me up? You know, I need a fix in the heart. And I don't know what happened. What I can say, I was very tense when I met our Maharaj with the head, and was very tense, and so, but then I relaxed totally, and I could emotionally let go, and I didn't feel so much shame and guilt for what I have seen at the holiest of all places, and I became a little bit peaceful. Then I went back to the palace, locked myself in the door, and prayed in the night some good amount of prayers, and then fell asleep, and in the morning I woke up and I was enthusiastic to chant more extra rounds. Some fix that happened. I'm sorry? Woke up in the morning and I felt enthusiastic to chant. So I continued with my vrata, didn't go to Germany. I think what I have told you is something which I still sometimes struggle with, but I do know by now that it's not me. This difference has happened in the years of chanting. I still sometimes nonsensical thoughts enter the mind, but I know it's not me. You know, I see it like a bus who comes, a Greyhound bus, which comes in the New York Port Authority bus station, and then it leaves again. It's a momentary guest in the Port Authority bus portal. Do we say bus portal? Bus station. But then it leaves. So, although these thoughts come and go, I now think it's not me, it's just the mind which still has these sanskaras. And they are somehow very deep. They are not moved. Like when I was in the Philly Ratha Yatra, there was Yadunandan with his theater play. And you know what I liked the most? What one part of me liked the most? The song Heartbreaker from Led Zeppelin. They had that also, you know, in the theater play. My conditioned nature likes wild music, you know. But I know by now, so what? It's not me. I think we give only strength to this problem, sexual attachment, and you know, we all come. You can ask Archana Siddhi. I think from your description, I understood you were also inclined towards the hippie culture a little bit, a lot. You were quite inclined, or middle. Yes, we were Rukmini. You were a little bit inclined also. Too much inclined, yeah. Too much inclined. And you know, in that culture, you can't, I don't know, nowadays you have so much. There's this music, that music, and this movie, and so on. It's so much that you don't, that a normal person, I think it's overload. He doesn't take anything because it's too much. Yeah. I'm aware that people engage in material life still, but see, we only had a few bands, and you know, it was not so much. So therefore, we knew everything about everything, which was available on the market, and these bands were our own age. You know, they, Syam Sundar always explained, they took up what was in the atmosphere, what the young people felt, and they fed it back with loud music and a solid beat. You know. So it went very deep, and we were so young. I was only 14 years old, and all my heart was open to these influences. I was right away very interested. Yes, let me hear this as often as possible, you know, and yes, let me participate freely, you know, in this. It is much better than the boring life of my parents. You know, it is had certainly good qualities to it. And, you know, we read all this and read Hermann Hesse and all this. It was really our religion in some ways. So it went very deep in the young impressionable mind. It was only 12 years, 13 years. I was only participating from, I became a devotee when I was between 15 and 16. So I don't have much of a material life to report to all of you. But I very much was impressed and very so supremely interested in this, Some literature, please, some music, everything. I'm interested in everything. This is how we felt at that time. So it certainly made some impression. And it's there, but you don't have to act about it. And when it's there, I'm not disturbed. I have this dent here in the gross body, you can see. So I have some dents in the mind. That's me, So what is the problem? You don't have to act about it. I don't become disturbed about it any longer because I know it's not me. It's just there, and I become amused that it's still that these dents are there, like on the Philadelphia. I thought Philadelphia is such Philadelphia is a name of a town and a name of a German cheese, So here in the midst of this, I again hear my music, cream cheese. Yeah, cream cheese. It's American. Okay. No need of Philadelphia. Yeah. So there also I knew everything. I still knew the. I knew fully. It's there. It's recorded in this life. It is there, and I don't think it will go. But now I don't think. Now I think. No, this is, I know, I recognize, but let it go, let other people, I have Hare Krishna melodies now, I like them also very much more, so, but I don't allow myself to become disturbed. I think when you become disturbed and go like, oh no, then you give strength to this, Let it just go, like bad air. You pass bad air. I don't know if you also do it from time to time. You don't talk about it except for in a philosophical lecture. I'm joking. It's not relevant to your life. So this is what I want to say, what I can say, but if you want to hear more of my innumerable weaknesses, I'm also I feel it's good to be honest with what's going on in you, because that means you are detached. Anyone can know. I guess there are a few things which I wouldn't feel so comfortable to discuss, but basically everyone can know it. And the point is, what I have noticed, you are only in this when you are in a certain level of consciousness, but then you chant and read and whoop, you're somewhere else, and you look at it and think, I have found out in my life that you can really change the level of your consciousness, and it's very easy. Prabhupada has given us these powerful tools and His mercy. You can do it. You can choose in what consciousness you want to be, and then you're just not there any longer. And you think, what? My mind has ever thought like this? Amazing. But when you come down on this, on a downward spiral, you know, if you allow yourself to go into this weak thoughts, you know, you go deeper and deeper, and then you lose your taste to even chant your 16 rounds. You still don't stop. You develop attachments of the most embarrassing sorts, you know, like a movie which you feel you can't escape it, you know, you must see it, you know, and it goes down and down, and then you're negative and you're criticizing devotees, and then you lose it all and go into the dark night. But you can just as well as you go in the downward spiral, you can go in the upward spiral, and it starts really by being honest and saying, oh, here we got a problem. I'm again in the lower modes. Now let me put some spiritual energy, some spiritual food there. And then you feel your consciousness going up. It's like that, at least in my experience. And I've seen this in many devotees. We have a body, we have a material mind, and there are these things, and therefore we need to be careful. We have to carefully choose our environment, because our environment really influences our consciousness. With environment, I don't just mean the room, I mean the people we associate with, the food which we take in, the words which we say, the thoughts which we think, all that, you know, we really have to choose the environment, and then we see. I'm a very disorderly person. When my writing table often looks as if the atom bomb has just arrived there, and then I'm then I found out it takes me double as long to answer emails and do things as if when I just put the writing table in order. You know, here are the pens, here are the unanswered emails, the books, most of them I don't read at the moment, so let me put them on the bookshelf, you know, okay, this is a little sticky here, that was from that medicine which fell next to the thing, so let me wash that. And when the environment, that is the writing table in this example, is tidy and neat and clean, you think all of a sudden productive thoughts, and you can work very, and you have brilliant ideas which you can commit to paper, and so on. I have noted that. Are you also sometimes a slump? Do we say slump? Slop. Yeah, not slump. A slop. Yeah. So then you put things in order. So this is, in one word, my solution. Put your environment in order, and you will see how your consciousness rises.
That was wonderful. I can't tell you how important it is for the devotees to hear such honest sharing from sadhakas, because sometimes devotees, you know, I do a lot of counseling, and not that I don't have my own issues, but sometimes devotees will come to me with something that is, I know everybody struggles with, but yet they've held it in and they haven't told anyone, they've been afraid to talk about it, and you know, it's such a common thing, just like you're saying. It's just something, you know, in the mind, and they're giving so much energy to it, thinking that, you know, this is so terrible. If anybody knows, they won't like me anymore. So, yeah, it's just so good to be able to hear this. And I'm hoping that this will open everybody up, and when we're doing our own processing, to think about the things that you may be struggling with right now, and to be vulnerable and share in a group. And I mean, that's, it really is, when we can look at something, admit it, and actually ask for help from a God sister or God brother, that's when we really start to be able to go forward and we don't stay stuck in our mental concoctions. That was just beautiful. I just so touched my heart so much. You want to say anything? Okay.
You said there was a connection between them. You said that the two things came one after the other. First, the dryness in the chanting, and then these material vibrations, the attachments. Mm-hmm. Did you say there was a connection there, or do you think they're related in some way?
I think very much that they are related. We are by nature pleasure seeking. That is. And if we don't find it on the spiritual platform, we seem to be driven to find it on the material platform.
I had a question for you too. I was thinking that because of what you went through, you were able to pray in great intensity. So in a way, from my angle, it was mercy. Because you went through that, you were able to pray maybe more intensely than you would have normally. So it's not always a bad thing to go through that, if you can, because it seems like it's the intensity of the feeling and the calling out that, and I've experienced I get a lot of reciprocation when I'm down. Sure. Like that.
Yes, certainly. Sometimes devotees have told me, now let me ask you, how do you think like this? That when they see a good kami movie, where everything is displayed, aggression, someone beats at the other person, usually that's an important part of the movie, and then they feel more inclined to Krishna consciousness. Some devotees have told me. I think it is, it's a rationalization, yes. Yeah, it's a part of my sadhana. I think this is what I hear from devotees is a very difficult philosophy. to put it politely. But I think if we are tested and going through something, then we usually can turn to Krishna. And there is this prayer by Queen Kunti, who said that when they were so much inflicted by misery, the Pandavas, they always turned to Krishna, and therefore now she, where she is well off, everything, the battle is over, she feels she doesn't turn as often to Krishna, so therefore she prays miseries should come back again. So miseries have their place. Mm-hmm.
I have that when you do intense chanting, it brings up a kind of like all your anartas up in the air. And I just wondered if there is a difference between, or if you can tell if you know when it's, coming out of really like intense and really genuine chanting, or it's kind of the dryness of just being totally, I don't know how to say, like, not really in a good consciousness, and you know what I mean?
I would like to put this question to the group. Is it that when we are chanting intensely that anattas come out? Or is it just anyways, Is it the result of bad consciousness that anattas come out? Is the question clear? Yeah.
I've had both experiences. Prabhupada talked about the ghee and, you know, how the impurities would come up. So it seems that sometimes if you're intensifying the heat, the impurities will come up more quickly. Mm-hmm. And I would think both are there, and you'd have to be able to analyze for yourself, what have I been doing up to this point? What's been going on in my life?
Yes, Yagya Purusha Prabhu.
Yeah, I also experienced that Shem 64 owns
that, and I think we all have that to some degree. There's, you know, a certain one point you hit a certain zone and everything is going great. You know, you're kind of in the golden spot where things kind of smooth and your hearing is good and your attentiveness and things kind of flow. And then usually towards the end, for myself, it's usually at the end, the last, I don't know, 16 or 8 rounds sometimes can be a total uphill struggle. It's like I've kind of just to get myself to really to focus and to really make it quality, not just get him done. There's this, sometimes that is there. That sometimes I have that from being really, really in the zone, and then at the end, maybe it's just running out of mental energy, mental strength. You just can't focus because you're spent in one sense, and then you kind of just, you know, this could be related to that. So I also kind of see that. So from intensity, you can. From being in intensity, then all of a sudden, just because maybe being tired, maybe that's what it could be, then all of a sudden, thoughts and ideas, and just want to do this, and want to think about food, and think about sleep or whatever, because you can't focus anymore. Then all these things come up. That's also sometimes I can.
I very much want to say something on tiredness and exhaustion. It's really, my dear devotees, it's when we are tired that our mind becomes especially restless, more than necessary. It's almost like some of you had little children, or they know of families who have little children. When they are tired, the little children can become very restless and beat even their parents, and do things. And I have seen when the mind is very weak, what Yagya Purusha said, or exhausted, simply exhausted, then it seems to think weak thoughts. Therefore, I have concluded in my life something, that we need to take care of our health, especially some of you. I can see you are above 18 years now. You need to take care. If you don't want to become bitter, frustrated old men and women, you need to do something like a regular exercise. It's really, really important. Prabhupada, you know, in his letter writing, he always writes, "I hope this meets you in best health." Have you noticed this? He could have written so many other things, you know, all the best, or may Krishna's blessings be with you, or there are many things how you can end. He could have ended the letter. And I must say, I have not seen anyone else signing the letters like this. Maybe now, because some of us like to follow Prabhupada, if not imitate him, that we write such a thing also. But why he wants us to be in good health? I think because we need it for our spiritual life. So I think if you invest like 10 minutes, 15 minutes a day in some good exercises where you really sweat and breathe and pant and move about, then you will have longer, then you will not have these embarrassing mind collapses which come. That's what I think. But yes, when you are exhausted, the mind is just not cooperating. It's not cooperating. Unnecessarily, he doesn't cooperate.
So, why don't we now just take some time for ourselves and get a piece of paper and a pen and just do some journaling. What are your, we heard now very honest revelations of different devotees, specifically Maharaj. What are our valleys in spiritual life, and maybe particularly to the chanting of the holy name? That's nice. It's not necessarily, but there's something else sticks out that's particularly difficult for you. You can write that. It's very good to do that. So why don't we just take maybe like 10 minutes, and so we can do some personal journaling. You can take 10 minutes to write down what are your personal struggles, personal difficulties in chanting. Here we're, because it's the Japa retreat, so we're focusing on chanting, but it doesn't necessarily have to be on chanting. It's nice if it is, because it's our, as Mars said, our most important instruction, our most important activity. So we can take maybe like 10 minutes and do some personal journaling. Is this clear? Anybody has any question? Thank you. And you might find yourself staring at a white piece of paper for a while, that's good. That's a good start. And just keep going, just keep staring. Unless you're a perfectly pure Paramahamsa, there are actually a lot of blocks in front of our path, and we might not even be aware of them. So take your time, be patient, have a little courage. It might not be pleasant. Some things that you might have never admitted to anybody. And you can just write down, and what you want to share later with the people, that's up to you. You don't have to share everything. If it's something too personal, just keep it to yourself. But it's good to write it down. So just give yourself that opportunity to reflect and come in touch with that, because, again, there's nothing will be more liberating than that. Somehow we can come in touch with our deepest fears.